Well, first of all, guys, I am sorry that I'm over 2 hours late with this video. It was one of those days that I had my nose in some stuff that I was working on and looked up at the clock, and it's hours later. Usually my phone beeps at me, reminds me to do these, but today I don't know what happened. I must have somehow disabled it. So we're in chapter 25, Acts 25, and I'm gonna get the whole chapter today. I'm not going to read it to you. I want you to hit pause and read it yourself, but this is a chapter. It's kind of a narrative. It just tells particular series of events that happen, and I'm going to run it all together because that's just what I'm seeing here to do with this, and we'll draw out an application of it there at the end. But you remember there's so much corruption here. Paul has been with Felix in chapter 24, Governor Felix. Felix was corrupt. Felix kept Paul in custody for 2 years without a real trial, without making any rulings, just kept him there. And then when Felix is out of office, he leaves him there. He says he wishes to do the Jews a favor because he's playing political games and he wants this special interest group, the Jews, to like him. And so 3 days after Festus is the next governor after Felix. Festus has to go deal with this because Felix never dealt with it. He has a Roman citizen, an innocent man, Paul, locked in custody, and Festus, guess what? You have to do this. So he went up to Jerusalem. Three days in office. This is one of the first things he deals with, okay? But it's a pretty high-profile thing in this province. The Jews want Paul dead. Paul's famous. It's a big deal. And Felix has just been hiding him there for 2 years, waiting for a bribe. He's just so corrupt. Anyway, they're asking for a favor against Paul, verse 3. They summon him to Jerusalem. They're planning an ambush to kill Paul on the way. Remember, they were planning this. They've been planning this for a couple of years now. They want to kill Paul. They have to get him out of jail so they can kill him. Okay? It's hard to break into a jail and kill him because there's so many soldiers guarding him. All right? I mean, it's evil. All right? And so Festus asks, he says, hey, why don't you guys come along, verse 5? And bring charges against him. So Festus is like, I don't know why I need to bring him to you. Come over to my office and we'll have another trial here. Okay, Festus is going to have his shot at this. See if he can do any better. He does not. Okay. When he's been there, all right, they come down and it says, verse 7, that they're bringing many serious charges against Paul that they could not prove. It says it right there. Paul argued in his defense, neither against the law of the Jews, nor against the temple, nor against Caesar have I committed any offense. All right? They accuse him of stuff. They can't prove it. Paul says, I didn't do it. And guess what happens? Corruption. Shocker. Verse 9, Festus, who wished to do the Jews a favor, said to Paul, do you wish to go up to Jerusalem and there be tried on these charges before me? Okay, Paul is in the local appeals court in Caesarea. That's Festus's office. That's the official place. And Festus is saying, hey, do you want to take this to a less formal place around back in Jerusalem here? The Jews are going to kill him on the way. It's already written. They're going to ambush him on the way. That's the plan. Okay? Festus wishes to do the Jews a favor, is going to transport Paul back to Jerusalem. If he doesn't get ambushed and killed on the way, he's going to be in the court in Jerusalem, which is run by this Sanhedrin council that wants to kill Paul. Is Paul going to get a fair trial in Jerusalem? No way. Last time he was seen in Jerusalem is literally why he's on trial now, because they accused him of a bunch of stuff and tried to kill him. Okay, why would Paul want to go back to Jerusalem? Paul doesn't. Okay, but the guy is trying to do the Jews a favor. That's what it says. Okay, he's trying to get some political points with these guys so that he looks good as a governor of this crazy province. All right. Paul said, I'm standing before Caesar's tribunal where I ought to be tried. I'm in the right place now. Okay. That's what he's saying. To the Jews, I have done no wrong, as you yourself know very well. Okay. So I'm where I'm supposed to be. I didn't do anything wrong over there. So why would you take me there, buddy? You and I both know why. Corruption going on. Verse 11, he says, but if I am a wrongdoer and have committed anything to which I deserve to die, then I don't seek to escape death. But if there is not, but if there is nothing to their charges against me, no one can give me up to them, and so I appeal to Caesar." And then Festus, when he had conferred with his council, answered, "To Caesar you have appealed; to Caesar you shall go." All right. Paul sees straight through the corruption. Festus is trying to do a favor to the Jews, and Paul doesn't go for it. And he appeals to Caesar. He's a Roman citizen. He has the right to appeal to Caesar. He's already in Caesar's court here in Caesarea. He's at this, "I am standing before Caesar's tribunal," verse 10. It's the local, the appeals branch of Caesar's court, okay? He's in a Roman court, and he's appealing to the next court because this guy won't make a decision. Not that he was found guilty and he's appealing it. He wasn't found anything. They're just playing games with him for a couple of years now. And he's like, "Look, if you're going to try to transfer me to a different court in Jerusalem, no way. If we're going to transfer anywhere, then I appeal up the chain to Caesar himself in Rome. And if you're unwilling to make a ruling, if you're unwilling to make a factual, realistic reality ruling here, just I'm innocent and you're not willing to say so, even though we both know I am. Well, if you're just going to play games, then hey, I'll just appeal this. I want out of here." Okay, that's what he does. Well, some days had passed. Verse 13. They still haven't loaded him on a ship. He's still not headed for Rome. And Agrippa the king and Bernice arrived at Caesarea and greeted Festus. Okay, happy-go-lucky, you know, royal people coming over to the governor's mansion. Let's have a big party. They stayed there many days, and Festus, they're talking, laid Paul's case before the king. He's telling, this is something on his mind. He's going to talk about it, okay? He describes what happens. I'm skipping over this stuff, but he explains it to this King Agrippa, tells him, hey, here's what's going on. Verse 20, "Being at a loss as how to investigate these questions, I asked whether he wanted to go to Jerusalem and be tried there regarding them, but when Paul had appealed to be kept in custody for the decision of the emperor, I ordered him to be held until I could send him to Caesar." Then Agrippa said to Festus, "I would like to hear about him myself." Okay, now we're going to bring the king in, King Agrippa. This is like a King Herod sort of, the Herod dynasty is over, and now it's Agrippa, in case you're following that sort of thing. Verse 23, "The next day, Agrippa and Bernice came with great pomp, big party. Hey, let's go talk to the interesting political prisoner that we've been holding for a couple of years now without reaching any verdict, without really even having charges. And let's go have a party and talk to him. Sounds like an interesting guy." Same as what Herod did to Jesus that night. He's hoping to see him, hoping that he'll do some magic trick for him or something. So corrupt. Festus lays it out, verse 24, "King Agrippa and all those present with us, here's the guy. Here's Paul, the guy that you've heard about." Okay, verse 25, "I found that he had done nothing deserving death, and as he himself appealed to the emperor, I decided to go ahead and send him." Verse 26 and 27, "But I have nothing definite to write to Caesar about him. Therefore, I have brought him before you all, and especially before you, King Agrippa, so that after we have examined him, I may have something to write." He's going to send him a prisoner without charges, without knowing what to even say about him. "For it seems to me unreasonable," verse 27, "to send a prisoner and not indicate the charges against him." Then don't do it, man. If it's unreasonable, don't do it. But King Agrippa wants his shot at Paul, wants to see what he can get out of this whole situation. I mean, it's just crazy. Anyway, that's the end of chapter 25. It's this Festus. I mean, at least Festus is trying to advance the justice system. Better than Felix, who was just holding him there in custody indefinitely, hoping for a bribe. I guess you could say Festus is a little bit better. And Agrippa, hey, I'm curious too. Can I get a shot at him? But it's so crazy. It's so ridiculous. And Paul sees through it, and he appeals to Caesar. Okay. Now, what does that have to do with you and me? Because that's really, you know, it's interesting that this happened. It's crazy that things were this corrupt, but is it just an old story that we don't live in a Roman Empire anymore? This isn't our story. How does this have to do with us? What I see there that I think does apply to us is I hear a lot of people talk about persecution, Christian persecution in the United States. And I want to hit on that because Paul is experiencing what we would call persecution, right? He's in jail because of his faith. That's persecution. And they've made up false charges to put him in jail, but they're not true, and it's obvious they're not true. The only reason they're coming after him is because he's a Christian. And that's not happening in the United States, okay? What is happening, though, in the United States, there's a whole series of things. Our culture is changing and stuff, but I want to show you this. It's over in 1 Peter chapter 3. It says, have a good conscience. 1 Peter 3, verse 16, okay? Have a good conscience so that when you are slandered, it's when people lie about you like they're doing with Paul. When you're slandered, those who revile your good behavior, they hate your good behavior in Christ, may be put to shame. Verse 17, it is better to suffer for doing good, if that should be God's will, than for doing evil. Okay? Have a good conscience so that when you're slandered and those who revile your good behavior in Christ will be put to shame. That's what's happening to Paul here. Okay? All the governors, all the leaders, the kings, even though they're corrupt, they see straight through it and they're like, Paul didn't do anything worthy of death. Paul, we could let him free. In fact, chapter 26, when he goes directly with Agrippa here, he's going to say that. But Festus says the same thing. It seems to me unreasonable in sending a prisoner not to indicate the charges against him. There's not even charges against him. Like, they've accused him of things. They're just totally untrue. And Paul just straight up appeals to Caesar. And he's like, I don't really know what to make of this. I have a prisoner that wants, you know, I have to send him to Rome, but I can't even tell them why. That's unreasonable. Well, guess who's put to shame in this situation? All the corrupt people. Guess who looks good? Paul. Paul's the prisoner, but they can't come up with any charges against him. So why is he in jail? Well, because a lot of people lied. And a lot of governors, Felix and Festus, don't have the spine to just set the man free who did nothing wrong. So those guys look bad. They are put to shame, like 1 Peter 3 says. When they revile you for your good behavior, they'll be put to shame. And it's better if it comes down to persecution, if 1 Peter 3:17, for it is better to suffer for doing good, if that should be God's will, than for doing evil. Paul went out of his way to make sure they had no real accusation against him. And so when they came at him with false accusations, they were put to shame. When they put him in custody and locked him up as a prisoner for 2 years waiting for a bribe without any charges against him, they were put to shame. Paul, it's a shame for Paul that he's in jail here. It's a shame this is happening to him. I don't like it. He probably didn't like it. But at the end of the story here is that he is found innocent. He didn't do anything wrong. And the longer he's there, the more obvious it becomes. And the more obvious the corruption and evil of the other guys becomes, right? The longer this drags out, the better Paul looks, the worse they look. And so, you know, let's think of it that way. Is the United States kind of trending in a direction that's non-Christian? I think it is, generation over generation. I think you could say that right now. I don't think that's necessarily the future. I foresee a lot of widespread revival going on. It's starting you know, a little while ago. But okay, so that's happening. So let's just say it's happening. Let's say that the country is turning more secular, more anti-Christian, and stuff like that. And you can, if you're looking for it, you can certainly find stories in the news every day about Christian businesses or whatever, kind of suffering different things under the law. Okay, that's fine. Well, guess what? Let's be above reproach. Let's have nothing that they can hold against us. Let's have zero issues that would hold any water in a court of any kind, so that if they accuse us, they'll be the ones put to shame. If we suffer, we suffer. Okay? Peter says, it is better to suffer for doing good, if that should be God's will, than for doing evil. So suffering might happen to you. I don't know. This country is it's a free country. It's still a free country. I don't care what you say. I don't know what other country you can go to. This is the best one. It's way better than where Paul lived. It's way better than what Peter's writing about. Okay. So let's be above reproach. Let's not fight battles that aren't Jesus. Let's let everybody else fight those battles. Let's have the culture wars rage. When a Christian needs to make a stand and do and say the right thing and protect righteousness and stuff, we should absolutely do it. But let's be above reproach about it. And let's not fall into these traps that just make people angry at you and hate you. Don't give them anything else to hate. Make them hate Jesus himself. If they're going to hate, it's going to be the righteousness of Christ in you that they hate. And let's not mix it with our other sorts of things, okay? That's where I would draw this from us. Where that was chapter 25 of Acts. We're going to be in chapter 26 next. And it's more of the same, but there would be different things to draw out of it. Praise the Lord. I'll see you tomorrow.